Thousands of Israelis are on a five-day march from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem demanding the release of hostages being held by Hamas in Gaza.
I'm always in pain and I can't sit at home anymore. I have to do something. And this march is what I am going to do with all the families of the hostages and this entire country.
When the Israel-Hamas war finally ends, what's next?
The only alternative to further bloodshed would be peace.
And later, multiple alarming reports this week on the increasing threats of climate change. Today is Thursday, November 16th. This is VOA's Flashpoint Global Crises. Good evening, I'm Lori London. Internet and telephone services have collapsed across the Gaza Strip for lack of fuel, bringing a potentially long-term communications blackout. Residents say Israeli forces dropped leaflets Thursday warning Palestinians to flee parts of southern Gaza. That signals a possible expansion of operations to the zone where most of the territory's population has fled to escape the danger. Meanwhile, soldiers continue searching for traces of Hamas in Shifa Hospital in the north. They displayed guns they say were found hidden in one building, but have yet to release any evidence of the central Hamas command center that Israel has said is concealed beneath the complex. Hamas and staff of the hospital deny the allegations. The latest from Associated Press correspondent Karen Chamis.
Israel's military has released a video from inside Gaza's largest hospital after a raid on the facility where newborns and hundreds of other patients have suffered for days without electricity and other basic necessities. The military released video from inside Shifa, showing three duffel bags it said it found hidden around an MRI lab, each containing an assault rifle, grenades, and Hamas uniforms. They also showed a closet that contained a number of assault rifles without ammunition clips. Israeli military spokesman Lieutenant Colonel Jonathan Conricus said,
"And when our troops opened this closet here, which is in the main part of the clinic, this is what they found. These weapons have absolutely no business being inside a hospital."
The Associated Press could not independently verify the Israeli claims that the weapons were found inside the hospital. After encircling Shifa for days, Israel faces pressure to prove its claim that Hamas used the patients, staff and civilians sheltering there to provide cover for its fighters. Hamas and Gaza health officials deny militants operate in Shifa. Palestinians and rights groups accuse Israel of recklessly endangering civilians. I'm Karen Chamas.
Meanwhile, in Haiti, the director of a hospital there says that a heavily armed gang surrounded the medical center and trapped women, children, and newborns inside until police rescued them. He told the Associated Press that gangs were torching homes surrounding the hospital and preventing everyone inside from leaving. The hospital has been considered an oasis in a community overrun by gangs that have unleashed increasingly violent attacks against each other and civilians. The families of nearly 240 hostages Hamas is believed to be holding in Gaza have begun a five-day march from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. They say they want the government to do more to win the freedom of their loved ones. Linda Gradstein reports from Tel Aviv.
It has been weeks of agony for the families of the hostages, weeks with no news about whether their loved ones are alive. Now they are marching to Jerusalem. Yuval Aran survived the massacre at Kibbutz Be'eri, but seven members of his family, including three children, were taken hostage by Hamas.
"I always worry. I'm always in pain, and I can't sit at home anymore. I have to do something, and this march is what I am going to do with all the families of the hostages and this entire country."
Shaul Levy's granddaughter, Naama, was seen being kidnapped in one of the first videos posted by Hamas on social media networks. Levy says he is marching to deliver a message to the government.
"We start here in this museum, Tel Aviv, walking to Jerusalem, hoping to meet the government, hoping the prime minister, to emphasize that there is no any alternative, only to bring them all back home."
The Hostage and Missing Families Forum advocacy group has demanded urgent attention be paid to the needs of more than 30 children taken hostage without their parents. They believe that one woman may even have given birth in captivity. Shelly Shemtov's 21-year-old son was kidnapped from the music party in Kibbutz Re'eim.
I am demanding from Benjamin Netanyahu and from all the cabinet to give us answers and deeds. We have no strength anymore. Bring back our children and bring our families home.
Israel believes that Hamas and Islamic Jihad are holding hostages in tunnels below buildings in Gaza, including hospitals, accusations Hamas and hospital officials deny. Israel's army spokesman shows a tunnel leading to what he says is a maze of underground rooms below the Rantisi Children's Hospital in northern Gaza. Israeli army spokesman Daniel Hagari.
You're now entering into the room where we suspect the hostages were being held. I want you to look at this room. People are putting curtains with nothing above, just wall. No reason to put here a curtain unless you want to film hostages and deliver movies.
The U.S.-designated terrorist groups Hamas and Islamic Jihad have posted videos on their social media channels of hostages making statements which Israeli analysts believe are coerced. A new video post shows a Hamas spokesman saying that the group is willing to release up to 70 hostages, apparently women, children, and the elderly, in exchange for a 5-day ceasefire and the release of women and minors serving time in Israeli jails. Abu Obeida is a spokesman for the Hamas armed wing.
The truce should include a ceasefire and allowing aid relief, everything in Gaza Strip. But the enemy is procrastinating and evading to pay the price of the deal.
Israeli officials say they worry that a 5-day ceasefire will allow Hamas to rearm and continue to fight Israel. They also say there will be heavy international pressure to continue the ceasefire. The families of the hostages worry that time is running out for their loved ones, and they say they hope that their march will continue to focus Israeli and world attention on the plight of the hostages and intensify efforts to secure their release. Linda Gradstein, VOA News, Tel Aviv.
Meanwhile, sexual violence can be a weapon in warfare, and female hostages face unique risks. That warning from a report submitted to the International Red Cross by a medical team of the Israeli Hostages and Missing Families Forum. The group was formed to bring home the Israelis kidnapped by Hamas militants. VOA's Natasha Moskovaya has more from Tel Aviv.
239 Israeli hostages are still believed to be held by Hamas in Gaza. About 100 of them are women. About one-third of these women are under 18 years old.
In Hamas attack on Kibbutz Be'eri, Reuma Tarshansky lost her 15-year-old son Lior. Her teenage daughter Gali was abducted and taken to Gaza. She has not heard anything about Gali's condition for more than a month.
Gali is 13. She's a teenage girl. My biggest nightmares at night are related to this subject. Puberty age, the changes she is going through, she is alone there. I don't know what they did to her.
Legal and medical experts working with the hostages' families on Monday submitted a report to the International Red Cross listing the female hostages' pre-existing medical conditions, ranging from heart disease to diabetes to asthma, and warning that in violent conflicts, women are especially vulnerable to sexual abuse.
The body of women is very often taken as a symbol to the body of the nation, and so violating the woman is actually violating the whole nation of the enemy. They are more susceptible to these forms of crimes. And international law, United Nations, the ICC, recognized that conflict-related sexual violence is a special form of war crime and crimes against humanity.
Halperin Kadare told VOA more rights groups should draw attention to Hamas actions the day of the attack.
All of them resorted to the conventional symmetry, addressing the suffering of both sides to the conflict. And I want this to be clear. I am not denying for a moment, the suffering of women and children, of innocent civilians in Gaza. But What happened on October 7 stands out. It is not part of the symmetrical war between Israel and Gaza. It is something else, and it should be acknowledged. It should be recognized as crimes against humanity of the most cruel form ever committed in modern history.
Hamas also kidnapped Yarden Gonen's 23-year-old sister Romy from the music festival in southern Israel. She is still being held hostage in Gaza. She says that her sister has asthma and kidney stones, and she is worried about the potential for sexual violence.
Every minute someone can harm her. What is stopping them from doing that, you know? They did it on October 7th for so many women.
Gonen pleaded for more women's organizations to speak out for the release of the hostages.
How could you leave us alone? How could you leave my sister alone? Why couldn't you speak until now?
Israeli police are investigating reports of sexual assaults by Hamas and are using video recordings, forensic evidence and testimonies in their search for those responsible. Natasha Mozgovaya, VOA News, Tel Aviv, Israel.
A funeral is being held in Israel for Vivian Silver, a Canadian-born Israeli activist who devoted her life to seeking peace between Israel and the Palestinians. For 38 days, Silver was believed to be among the hostages held in the Gaza Strip, but due to the slow process of identifying some of the most badly burned remains, her family was finally notified this week that she had been killed in the October 7th Hamas attack. I spoke with John Linden, executive director of the Alliance for Middle East Peace, who knew her well, about Silver's life and the enormity of her loss.
The last time we spoke, we were talking about how you'd been in touch with Vivian Silver's son, and There was the thought that because her cell phone was found in Gaza, that she was one of the hostages, and they were holding on to hope, and unfortunately, the news changed this week. She was an important part of the efforts for peace in the Middle East, not just for Israel, not just for the Palestinians, but for coexistence. I understand you've known her for a long time. What can you tell us about who she was?
Yeah, I mean, Vivian was one of the most extraordinary figures in the peace-building movement, and for a very, very long time. So she moved to Israel in the 70s from Canada after a brief stopover in New York, and she kind of set about building things almost immediately. She introduced, first of all, feminism and women's rights as a core principle into the kibbutz movement. And then she set her sights on women's rights more generally inside Israel, and then Arab-Jewish equality. She co-founded an organization that's a member of AlMeps called Ajik Nisbid, which focuses on relations between Bedouin Arabs in the south of Israel and Jews, and building sort of Arab-Jewish partnership with one of the most underprivileged and historically neglected populations in Israel. And she really turned Ajik into a powerhouse. It is now today the leading organization of its kind, really transforming the lives of tens of thousands of people in the south of Israel over recent decades. And she retired from Ajik in 2014. And that's also when the devastating Gaza-Israel war happened that summer. She lived in Kibbutz Be'eri, which is right on the Gaza border, and reacted. This tells you a lot about Vivian. She reacted to that war, not with despair or anger, but with determination to change this reality. And as a recent retiree, co-founded Women Wage Peace, which has now grown to a movement of over 40,000 people, women working for peace between Israelis and Palestinians. She's extraordinary also for us at AlMep. She would be passing through Washington, D.C. and doing meetings at Congress, and she met our founder, Avi Meierstein, almost 20 years ago, and he said, we're going to found this network of peace-building NGOs, and she said, I'm in, and really helped him and us as we grew to think through the structure, the strategy, everything about it, and was a constant mentor and ally in this. I mean, when I was made executive director 5 years ago, I visited her in Kibbutz Be'eri, and she took me aside and gave me the most powerful 20-minute presentation on this forensic analysis of what was required in Israel-Palestine. It was extraordinary. And then almost at the drop drop of a hat, she switched back into Vivian the grandmother mode as other people arrived, and was suddenly kind of avuncular and funny and playful. And she was the smartest woman in smartest person in every room she ever walked into, but she kind of carried it really lightly. She was one of a kind.
And apparently, as you said, really integral in the peace movement and in your organization's development as well. So what a great loss to the world. And obviously it was something she was extremely passionate about.
Yeah. I mean, we have a lot of passionate people in our space, and we have a lot of sort of smart, strategic people, and we have these kind of determined sort of never give up people. We don't have all that many people who have all those qualities combined. Although the one thing I'd say, and it's very moving, both when we thought she had been taken hostage, but now in particular, since very late on Monday night when we found out she'd been murdered, the number of people who have reacted, both Palestinians and Israelis, with this sort of determination to carry forward Vivian's sort of ethos and way of being, like seeing this as being almost a torch being passed on. It's really moving. I wish she was here to see it, but obviously that's impossible. But the number of people whose lives she touched and that she really provided guidance to, and I was even going through my own WhatsApp messages with her, she just offered advice, and not in a kind of, you know, superior way or anything. It was just like really smart, shrewd advice and instruction and solidarity when things are bad. And I know for a fact there's hundreds of people that have similar WhatsApp threads with her, and they're probably looking through them this week too. So but your legacy lives on. I suppose going to be a memorial Thursday in Israel for her, and I think you're going to see Palestinians and Israelis, Jews and Arabs coming together at probably the greatest scale we've seen since October 7th, and that's Vivian's legacy too.
This was a complete shock to you and all those who loved her and her family as well. Obviously
the legacy she leaves behind are organizations and lives she touched, but all of us, our children, right, are the most obvious one. I've had the chance to spend a bit of time now with her son Yonah, and we arranged a meeting on Saturday when we still thought she was held hostage with him and another leader from our space, Mohammed Darasha, and the German foreign minister, Annalena Baerbock, who was in Tel Aviv. And he was channeling Vivian. Like, and he's a social worker working on other issues in Tel Aviv. He'd actually been a bit disenchanted from the peace movement, he would say so himself, and in recent years. And he's just the strength of pivoting straight to what needs to happen around peace, around the only way security is going to come for Israelis is through peace with Palestinians. And that's when he thought she was kidnapped. And then yesterday, literally like 12 hours after finding out she'd been murdered, it was the same message. It was, you know, directly saying we have to find a way to live together. We need to redouble efforts towards peace. And it's extraordinary. The apple didn't fall very far from the tree. And I think he has been an example to all of us. If we're feeling like we're in the dumps and depressed, if he, her son, is able to react in this sort of far-sighted and wise way, then we have to do it too.
John Linden, Executive Director of the Alliance for Middle East Peace. Thank you so much. With Israel's war in Gaza raging and what could be a long, drawn-out fight, the question remains what a future might look like when it finally ends. My colleague Steve Karish spoke with former Israeli ambassador Itamar Rabinovich for his insights into that very question about what might come next.
Taking a look at the current situation, Benjamin Netanyahu said the other day that Israel would maintain security in Gaza after the war indefinitely. Secretary Blinken said that Israel could not occupy Gaza. How do you see the post-war situation shaking out?
I think that the only way to create a stable, durable situation in Gaza would be to enable the Palestinian Authority to come back to Gaza. They would not come back immediately because they do not want to come back, quote-unquote, on the bayonets of the IDF. But there would be a transitional period with Arab or international or mixed force taking charge. Israel, of course, staying on the border and taking a very close look at what goes on. And at some point, the PA would take over and manage it the way it administers the territory that it does administer in the West Bank.
Is a two-state solution still desirable? Is it still possible?
It's a, you know, unfortunately, a controversial issue on both sides, I would say. But I'm one of those who believe in it, think that it's not a solution, but I emphasize it's not available right now. Right now, what Israel and the Palestinian Authority can do is they can negotiate an interim settlement, and mutual confidence needs to be rebuilt. The international community will have to chip in. It's not going to happen just between the Israelis and the Palestinians. And I definitely do not rule it out.
So your old boss, Yitzhak Rabin, was assassinated largely because he was attempting to make peace. He was making a deal with the Palestinians. Benjamin Netanyahu is much more right-wing than Rabin was. After what happened on October 7th, is it possible that another Israeli leader can rise up and have real popular support like Rabin did for making peace?
Yes, it can. Let me remind you that out of the very atrocious October war between Egypt and Israel in October 1973, there began a peace process that 6 years later, in 1979, culminated with the signing of the first Arab-Israeli peace treaty that is still with us today. So it took leaders on both sides. It took very skillful diplomacy led by Henry Kissinger. And in a way, it took the terrible cost of the war that both sides paid and realized that the only alternative to further bloodshed would be peace.
Are you optimistic for the future?
Not for the immediate future. It's going to be the current conflict will linger, and you know, transitioning to what I described will take time and effort. But in the long range, I am optimistic.
Former Israeli Ambassador Itamar Rabinovich speaking with my colleague Steve Karish. You're listening to Flashpoint, Global Crises from the Voice of America. I'm Lori London. On Thursday, Ukraine's capital woke up to the sound of an air raid alarm set off by a ballistic missile strike scare. The thwarted attack came as news that yet another top Western official was visiting Kyiv. We hear more from Anna Chernikova in Kyiv.
Overnight, Russian forces attacked Ukraine with 18 Shahed drones and one Kh-59 guided air missile. The Ukrainian Air Force confirmed the destruction of 16 drones and a missile. In addition, in the early hours of November 16, the city of Kyiv, together with a number of other central, northern, and western regions of Ukraine, woke up to the sound of an air raid alarm due to a ballistic missile attack scare. No casualties or damage were reported. Hours later, President Zelensky confirmed the visit Thursday to Kyiv by David Cameron, the newly appointed Secretary of State for Foreign Affairs of Great Britain. This is Cameron's first foreign visit in a new role. Zelensky confirmed that the main focus of discussion was about the need for additional weapons on the front line, strengthening of the Ukrainian air defense, and protection of civilians and critical infrastructure from Russian shelling. President Zelensky and Cameron coordinated positions on the implementation of joint initiatives, particularly in the context of promoting the Ukrainian peace formula and development of security guarantees under the Joint Declaration on Support for Ukraine, adopted by the Group of Seven at the Vilnius NATO summit. President Zelensky's office reported that the security situation in the Black Sea and the work of the alternative grain corridor were also discussed at the meeting. Lastly, the meeting included discussion on the issues of Euro-Atlantic integration and Great Britain's support for Ukraine's progress towards NATO membership. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
China and the U.S. have pledged to accelerate their efforts to address climate change ahead of a major U.N. meeting on the issue, making a commitment to take steps to reduce emissions of methane and other greenhouse gases besides carbon dioxide. It comes as two global reports released this week found humanity's fight to curb climate change is failing in dozens of ways. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
Cooperation between the world's two biggest emitters of greenhouse gases is considered vital to the success of the UN climate talks opening in 2 weeks in Dubai. It wasn't clear earlier this year whether the two governments would cooperate, given a sharp deterioration in ties over a range of issues. Both countries are aware of the important role they play and will work together to rise up to one of the greatest challenges of our time, they said in a statement released Wednesday in Beijing and Tuesday evening in Washington. President Joe Biden says his goal for the talks is simply to try to get U.S.-Chinese communications back on stable ground after a tumultuous year. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
And that's it for today's program, but there's always more VOA coverage 24 hours a day on our website, voanews.com, and on our social media platforms. On behalf of all of us here at VOA, we thank you so much for listening. Until tomorrow, I'm Lori London.
Stay up to date with VOA Podcasts. Each weekday, International Edition covers the world's biggest stories, while Flashpoint Iran and Flashpoint Ukraine examine their respective regions in depth every week.